Thank you very much indeed. I come down from Belfast, so it's absolutely lovely to be here. And it's lovely to be reading with Simon again. We've sort of been doing the circuit together a little bit over the last few months. So this is The Woman on the Other Side, and the poems are set in a few different places, in the Netherlands, in Russia, and in Tasmania. So the first one I'm going to read gives the collection its title. The title is in Dutch, but it's followed immediately by the English translation. And you'll see from the poem that my language skills leave a lot to be desired. Wie is de vrouw aan de overkant? Who is the woman on the other side? It was the only phrase that stuck in months of pre-trip conversation class. As I struggled with the syntax, it became clear you were a natural, spending hours in the lab perfecting your grasp. You couldn't wait to track down a local, to ask how to say, I love you. Ik hou van jou, you said, content with your acquisition. You led me in the appropriate response, encouraged me to practice daily. Ik hou ook van jou, all it took to keep you happy. The towns we visited belong to you, their guttural place names all tongue and throat, Groningen, Maastricht, Utrecht. You strode through their stone streets, listing the features of Gothic churches, as I fumbled with a bilingual map. There are a couple of ekphrastic poems in the book inspired by famous paintings, and this one was Chagall's I and the Village of 1911, and it is just called The Village. Look me in the eye, that I might see the memory that makes your jaw grow tense and your cheeks flush red as the fallen apples beside the village wall. Tell me of the green fields mapped in your mind and the winding paths that always lead you back. How your father held a scythe in his dark hands, taught you to hold the blade close to the ground, move clockwise from the meadow's edge, while a man milked a goat under a blue sky. How you once held ripened figs in your hands and the branches glowed in the changing light. That you circled back to her street. How the world shrank and turned full tilt to the sound of her violin, sent you spinning like the coloured light draped on lemon trees in the village square, and reaching for the silver cross pressed against your throat. Thank you. So the next couple deal with those lovely things, relationships. Blinking in the dark. If you have placed your hands at their urging on the new wet skull, small as a cat's, and recoiled in surprise at the slippery touch of matted hair, despite the months of waiting, of willing this moment to arrive, then you too can go back to the start of it all. To the moment in the dark, eyes shut and alert to every touch, when I caught my breath and you took it and made it your own, surged blindly on, splitting to become whole. Of course, we were totally unaware in the instant we set you ticking, busy talking, but that night I dreamt of rain. Or heard it on the window pane, persistent drops that fell and found the swell of a lake or river and made for the open sea. I thickened as shadows pulsed and screams and lines peaked and fell long before the quickening that made you finally real. You held on tight where others had faltered and were content to watch a tiny hand open and close in that watery rim until the walls shuddered in their bid to expel, and you emerged and cried out into the light. Our cord cut, they carried you off to count your fingers and toes, the vertebrae of your still curved spine, checking for telltale signs you might be less than perfect. They did not see the cord take form or hear it hiss as it slithered upward past my breast, and I lay caught, lead-legged and tied to machines as it rose up, ready to swallow me whole. I hear their laughter from another room. It strikes somewhere beneath my ribs. Its music is palpable enough to season this sauce with its sweetness. I squirt lemon into the pot and feel the sting as the acid grips the tiny cut on my hand. I can imagine the scene. My husband rising in stature under her gaze, his wine untouched. He will drink from her eyes, those wide, innocent eyes. Drunk in her approval and her zest for life, he will become all that he was. In the pot, the pasta boils, the heat rises and the water starts to hiss and spit. The knife cuts through the crusty bread as beads of sweat drip down the glass. Should I march down the hall or creep to witness firsthand this tender unraveling, this ancient dance of devotion, or stand barefoot in the kitchen stirring pasta lest it stick, and turn the radio up as some tribal chant rises in my throat? I follow the sound. He is vibrant. I recall that look on his face, those creases as familiar to me as the cracks on our bedroom ceiling. They are at their beginning, and though tears threaten and sting, I cannot tear myself away. And to think I introduced them, delivered her into his waiting hands, bloodied, wrinkled, screaming, new. I still dazed by the lights and by being separate. So I was doing a little bit of research. As I said, these poems range from the Netherlands in the snow to Tasmania in the sunshine. So I was doing a little bit of work on ice, and I came across a story, which I'm sure some of you will be familiar with, of the Incan mummy that was discovered at the top of an Argentinian mountain. And because of the snow and the ice, she was really distressingly well preserved and was moved then to a museum in Argentina. Inca Ice Maiden. The light will reveal at the touch of a switch the body of a sleeping child behind the glass, like an open hand scooped, ready to receive. Her head is bowed and the lice remain in her tight braids that fall about her face and cover her eyes. Visitors come to peer at the fine hairs visible on her arms, the hands in her lap, the grey shawl adorned with bones and metal. Those fine threads pulled around her neck 5 centuries before, ready to follow the mountain path up towards the gods and the freezing air. All her life she'd been prepared for this, hand-picked, just like the priests, statues, gold, the coca leaf and chica for the child, the north-facing tomb. Did you speak from beyond your icy grave when they gave thanks, or choke on your frozen tongue when they named you goddess? Plucked from the pit, did you feel the lurch? Taken from the heavens and thawed, your blood poured out like that of a living child, crimson and pure. Thank you. So as I said, some of the poems are set in Tasmania, where I spent a few weeks a number of years ago, and then I actually got to go back this year and read at the Tasmania Poetry Festival. So I'm going to start writing about Hawaii and see what happens there. I visited what was the convict colony at Port Arthur, and children as young as 8 were sent over on the boats, could be for stealing a loaf of bread. A lot of the people, particularly from Ireland, who were sent over, went over not being able to read and write, and actually on the months that it took to get over, they learnt to read and write. A lot of them had tattoos also on the boat as they went over, so that's sort of the inspiration for this poem. Pinprick work. For 7 months, she rubbed the pennies smooth and learned to read and write, and saw his name engraved upon the coin and wrote her own beside an X. Below the deck, she watched them perforate their skin and dab the wound with ink or soot to make the without hope turn black. Before they docked, she raised her cotton sleeve, carefully scooped the sediment from the lamp, made circles with her fingertips, I love to the heart. So in Port Arthur there was the main jail, then there was an island which had the younger children, and then there was the separate jail for those who wouldn't behave themselves and follow the rules and so on. So this is Enjoy Your Stay, Port Arthur, 1870. Welcome. You have progressed from the penitentiary to the separate jail. Here we keep the peace. Note the felt slippers covering our boots, the seagrass laid out on the concrete floor. To the right is your cell. Feel free to spend your 23 isolated hours behind this door. Walking will be done alone. Your remaining time in the high-walled yard. We will be out of sight, moving like ghosts. And I'll finish with this one, again another Tasmanian one, and set this time in a lavender farm. Lavender fields. We hide between the land's contours until they leave. Resist the temptation to sleep in the still warm ground, intoxicated by the shrub scent clinging to our skin. All this fruit from a small bag of aromatic seeds taken from high in the French Alps and planted here at just the right altitude in the red soil. Precious cargo carried from their London perfumery to Van Diemen's Land, along the lanes past Lilydale to Nebola, to settle on this vista fit for the strain. We wait to see the last sun setting. Backs pressed against the massive oak speak only in whispers. No one in the world hears. No one knows we are here. Without local varieties to cross-pollinate or corrupt their perfect crop, they stayed, worked the empty fields, placed the fragrant drops into the earth in curves. The lilac moon keeps us alert, that and our fingertips. When the solstice sun rises over the mountain, we are feasting on lavender honey, our eyes glowing amber. Thank you very much.